Welcome to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile, and we're coming off the heels of Media Day, and that means it's the unofficial start to the 2019-2020 Bulls season. And I can't wait. Of course, we started this podcast at the end of the 2019 season. We've done rebuilding plans. We've talked about the off-season moves. We've talked about the history of Gar Foreman and John Paxson. But now we're actually getting into the meat and potatoes of Bulls basketball, diving into that minutia, all the fun stuff that comes with a full season of the NBA and of the Chicago Bulls. So today we're going to be joined by Gary Calzone. He is the co-host of the Bully Pulpit podcast. We've had him on before. He delivered his rebuilding plan in our fifth episode. So it'll be cool to have him on to talk about all the moves that were made this summer and preview the Bulls season based off everything we heard during the media day this week. And I want to get to some of that real quick before I bring Gary in. I couldn't live tweet any of it. I was at work, and so I was reading all of the tweets coming in from different members of the Bulls media talking about some of the highlights from it, but I had recorded it on NBC Sports Chicago, caught it during the evening after work, and I tweeted out just some of the highlights that I had from my personal Twitter handle. That's at mgentile88, and it was retweeted through the Rebuildable Twitter handle. That's at rebuild_a_bull. Getting my shameless plugs in where I can. So I tweeted those thoughts out, and I want to expand on them today on my own and then with Gary a little later. I think one of the biggest messages that came from Media Day was the Bulls aren't putting that message out anymore about player development, about rebuilding, retooling, whatever you want to call it. They seem to be all in on playoffs or bust. That seemed like the message coming out of Media Day. Not just Gar Paxson or Jim Boylan. Like, you expect that from Jim Boylan for sure. He's the head coach, and he's a bit of a meathead. We all, I think, can agree on that. You would expect that kind of a message from Boylan. But it seemed like this message came from Gar Foreman, John Paxson as well, and the players. Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen made many references to it. And so did some of the other players like Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky, Otto Porter. But it seems like this is the organizational message that it's playoffs or bust. Now, that could be a little dangerous. You know, I would have thought that Gar Paxson would have been hedging their bet a little bit, maybe saying something along the lines of, we want to see more growth and we want to see more development, but, you know, it would be nice to make the playoffs as well, to take that next big step. But it seems like they're putting that out there, that the playoffs are the goal for this team. That could be a little dangerous because it's going to take a big leap to get there. Now, there were a lot of injuries last year, and I get that, but this was a 22-win team. And to make the playoffs, you're talking about maybe getting to 40, 41 wins. I mean, that usually gets you into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, but that's a pretty big leap to take. I mean, you're talking an 18, 19 game leap in wins. So that's expecting a lot, but, you know, they did make some key moves this offseason. We've talked about them a lot. Drafting Coby White, adding Tomas Satoransky, adding Thad Young. You know, it goes into another point that was made a lot during Media Day about the versatility of the roster. Jim Boylan mentioned it, adding multi-faceted ball handlers to the team, adding that ability to have versatility throughout the roster, having health, having depth. They've done that this offseason. Now it's just got to all come together. And sometimes it's easier said than done, but it's going to be a very fascinating season. I want to get into more of this with Gary, so let me bring him in. Again, he is the co-host of the Bully Pulpit podcast, Gary Calzone. Gary, how's it going? Thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, of course. Good evening. How are you doing?
Good. So last time we spoke, you dived into your rebuilding plan, and I actually wanted to start by getting your thoughts, because again, it's been a while, on this past offseason. If you had to put a grade to it, how would you grade Gar Paxson's offseason this summer?
Like, not just being like a straight up homer here, but like, I don't know what else, aside from getting a, you know, top name free agent, and even then a lot of them were hurt coming into the free agency and will be hurt for most of the next year. So as far as like exceeding my expectations. They did that. So I'm going to give them an A minus if I was to put a solid grade to it. Just looking at like my rebuilding plan, as you mentioned, some of the names that I brought, you know, brought about were Taj Gibson, for example. That was the, and I knew we needed like a power forward, a big type player who can kind of bring like play as well as a veteran presence with them. And like Thad Young wasn't even in my running there. Like I didn't even think he was within reach of us. So I just didn't even consider him. I just thought Taj Gibson would be the best that we can get. I still think, you know, he, knowing the city of Chicago, you know, would have been a great, you know, veteran leader for us. But Thad Young brings that as well as like very solid play, where Taj Gibson's severely on the decline. So they kind of exceeded my expectations with him and Tomas Satoransky. I brought him up a few times on my podcast previously saying, you know, this is a dude we should look at, but I didn't think we were going to. So yeah, no, I mean, they in free agency, they exceeded my expectations with those two. Draft, I think they took the best player available in Coby White.
Yeah, you know, we'll talk a little bit about those offseason acquisitions in a little bit. But of course, this week we had media day. It's the unofficial start to the NBA season for a lot of these teams. And so I was talking about a little bit before you came on that it seemed like the message was from everybody, Garpax, Boylan, the players, that it's playoff or bust. I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Do you think that it's a little dangerous to kind of go into this thinking playoffs or bust, or do you think that the moves that have been made should set them up for maybe one of those low seeds in the Eastern Conference?
I think that it can set us up for one of the lower seeds in the Eastern Conference. I would push back. I don't think the message was necessarily playoffs or bust, but I do think it was playoff level play. So at least be competing for a playoff spot. So I think if they're not competing for a playoff spot, then you can kind of chalk this up as, all right, we need to do something. But I fully expect them to be within the, let's say 38 win to 44 at the very highest ceiling win. So I wouldn't necessarily say they would be disappointed if they went from 22 to 38 wins. I think that's a pretty big jump there, and they got a lot of guys under contract the following year to build upon that. So if we don't make the playoffs, I'm not going to be crushed, and I don't think they will be either if they're close. Now if they're very far away from it, then I think there's a problem, yeah.
I think this was the first time we ever heard the organization as a whole really not say anything about, you know, rebuilding, player development, retooling. Like, we didn't hear any of that verbiage. We didn't hear that during media day, and I was kind of surprised.
Right. So I think the mindset of them going into this is they've got a team now, you know, that team's got to run. So I don't really know. I don't know what the exact expectations are, but I think they're really gunning for one of those lower seeds this season so that they can build on and try to get into the middle seeds next season. Like I said, I don't think they're going to be crushed if they get 38 wins, you know, pull the ninth or 10th seed and go back in the lottery one more time. I don't think that's going to be the biggest disappointment, being that's a 16-win jump. But yeah, no, I don't know. I've always kind of thought playoffs. I actually just ran into, they just opened a sports book in my town. So I actually just ran to the casino and betted on them to win the play or make the playoffs. So
to kind of get into some other things about media day and to talk a little bit about what you were bringing up with Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky, big emphasis from both Garpax and Jim Boylan on the versatility this roster has. And the signings of Thad Young and Tomas Satoransky definitely bring that. You mentioned Satoransky. What do you think is the biggest addition that he brings to this roster?
What I think he does is just the fact that he can play the one through the three. He's done it throughout his whole career. I mean, you could say he's not a traditional, small forward, or he's definitely a point guard, or he's definitely a shooting guard. I've heard all three of those, to be honest. So But I truly think he brings depth to all three of those positions. So him being healthy brings depth to literally three positions. And our biggest issue lately has been depth. Seriously, like Zach goes down, he can, you know, fill in at the two. Otto goes down for a game, he can fill in at the three. That's not as ideal, but it's definitely doable. He's 6'7".
The thing that I keep thinking about with him, too, is just imagine the lineup combinations you have. Like, it seems like there's so many ball handlers on this team that are all 6'6" or bigger.
Well, I was sometimes I totally geek out and just watch like offensive schemes online. So honestly, when they hired Chris Fleming, the new, you know, offensive coach that they kind of poached from the Nets, I stayed up, you know, one night watching like 3 hours worth of his German film. Anyways, where I'm going with this is I actually ran like this. I watched this college and I totally forget what it's like, a D3 college that was like in the 40th percentile or something like that in offensive efficiency or points per possession. And they skyrocketed with the same team, just basically returning from like sophomores and juniors to juniors and seniors. They returned this team and came back with like in the 99th percentile. What they did was bring like a ball handler, like a multi-ball handler system into it with the same guy. So pretty much like any single one of them can bring the ball up. And that's kind of see what I see with this Bulls roster. It gets us into transition faster. It gives us the chance to get more fast break points. Guys like, you know, Satoransky, Otto, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, they're all very good transition players, or at least can be. So giving us the chance to be more on like transition, I think it's just going to help our offense and help get into the flow of the offense. So, and Wendell too, I think he's a little bit slower than the rest of them, but he's also a very smart ball handler, you know, for being a five.
You brought that up, multi-ball handler. That was straight from Jim Boylan too during media day, is that this roster now has multi-ball handlers. It's got a bunch of guys that can basically run the offense. And one guy I wanted to ask about, you brought him up too, was Kobe White. Definitely going to be a big-time ball handler at that point guard spot. What do you think we should expect from him this year in his rookie season?
Oof, I've waffled with this one. I think Satoransky's going to start at the point guard. So it's not going to be like last year where you're going to have, you know, Wendell jump into the starting spot right away. It's not going to be 2 years ago where you're going to have your pick and Lauri Markkanen jump in, you know, barring injury. So there's a few situations where I think he can start right away. But I truly think he is in a bench role this season. And I think he can be effective in it because he's not there. There's not all that pressure as a rookie to come in and run an offense. And because they do have that multi-ball handler system, it's going to help him, you know, learn the offense and learn the NBA game, because he'll have a chance playing next to Zach LaVine, playing next to, you know, like you said, all those combinations. He'll be in lineups with, you know, running the one or the two with Zach LaVine out there, with Satoransky out there, with Archie Diakono out there, possibly Chris Dunn out there. I'm sure we'll get into him in a little bit, but Kobe, I mean, if you wanted to put like a numerical value to it, I don't think he's gonna, you know, come out and be like a 15 point per game rookie gunning for the rookie of the year this season because of the position we're gonna have him in. Casey Johnson, I think, said that he expects that the Bulls are planning on playing him like 24 minutes a game or something like that. I think I saw. I truly think he's going to be a scorer off the bench, though. So even though I said he's not going to be a 15 point per game scorer off the bench, I think he's going to kind of play the how could you forget? I was going to say if you remember, but how could you forget the Aaron Brooks role? But he's taller than Aaron Brooks, and he also isn't as horny as Aaron Brooks was when he had the ball in his hands. So I truly think he's going to play that type of role. But obviously be bigger and more on the flow in the offense, which I think is going to help him. But as far as like being a spark plug off the bench, I think that's going to be his first season.
your comparison to Aaron Brooks is interesting, and I get what you mean by it, like a spark plug, just coming off the bench to give you, you know, a 10-point stretch. And I could totally see that coming from him. Of course, definitely a higher ceiling because of his age and skill set and size, but I get what you mean by that. I kind of could see that with him too. And the lineup combinations that we were talking about and that you brought up too, like, I definitely could see that overlap when you have the second unit on the floor, you start bringing back the starters. You know, you can sprinkle in Zach LaVine with him. You can sprinkle in Tomas Satoransky and let Kobe White play off the ball, because he does have that ability to play off the ball too.
Right, and so does pretty much the rest of any of their ones and twos. Mm-hmm. Zach LaVine, I mentioned this is the one thing I wanted him to improve on this offense was more catch and shoot off the ball stuff, but I think he's already pretty solid at that. Satoransky, I mean, he could be on ball, he can be off ball, he can do whatever. I think Kobe White played a decent amount off ball even at North Carolina, and has shown that he can play off ball. I think RT, I mean, he can come in and play the one or the two. Shaq, when they bring him, you know, in every once in a while, I mean, he's going to be a specialist. He's not going to be on ball that much. So I think and Denzel Valentine too, because he plays the shooting guard. I expect him to kind of fill in at the one and the two, sometimes the three. But I think your odd man out though is Chris Dunn, because he does not play off the ball. And in my hours of watching Chris Fleming offense, I mean, it is literally there is no such thing as a, like, drive, you know, head first to the basket point guard system. I mean, that pick and roll offense, that slow it down offense just does not exist in any of his German or, I mean, even his Nets play from last year. So
let's get to that now, because the whole Chris Dunn thing I thought was very interesting coming out of Media Day. It seemed like during some of the press conference with Garpax and Boylan that they made an effort to really talk about how Chris Dunn really put in the work this offseason, really could be a key piece for them this season. It smelled like trade hype to me. It sounds like they're trying to get that leverage out there. What was your take on that?
Right. And like you said, trade hype. And I don't even know. I think they tried with him over the offseason. I think, you know, they probably, you know, did their due diligence and they probably just didn't see anything they wanted. So I don't really know. I mean, a lot of people still think Chris Dunn is the set starter because of some boiling comments in summer league, because of, you know, a variety of different things. So I don't necessarily know, but I really think the Bulls would be stupid not to start Satoransky with how versatile and big he is and how well I think he can fit with the starting unit. Mm-hmm. I just think they'd be straight up stupid to start Chris Dunn and have both Kobe and Satoransky off the bench, as well as Denzel Valentine. You can go the line with Archie, Shaq. I mean, those guys are going to be specialists, basically. They're going to be able to have a lot of DNPs, but their depth at that position, nonetheless, that they made an effort to re-sign. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It could be trade smoke. It could just be like, this guy's on our team. I don't know what else to say. I mean, some of the words were, we're really proud of Chris Dunn and things like that. So, like, I mean, I think a lot of it was just blowing smoke because they were asked the question. Mm-hmm. So I'm not looking too much into it, but I am kind of wondering what's going to go on, because I've watched and thought about what this offense could be. And I think Chris Dunn has a place in the league for sure, but I don't really know that it's in this system. I think he'd be better off, to be honest, backing up a guy like Ja Morant, because that system's going to be built off of Ja Morant. And Chris Dunn as a backup playing in a system that's built for the point guard, I think that's where he will thrive. I don't think Chris Dunn ever had a chance here unless it was 6 years ago backing up Derrick Rose. I think he could be good.
Well, I find it interesting because, you know, you want to move him too, because if you look at the way this roster is set up, we talked about it, there's a lot of pieces that you want to make sure get minutes. So if you're starting Satoransky even, like, do you want to sacrifice Kobe White's minutes? Do you want to sacrifice, you know, a younger guy like Chandler Hutchison if he gets healthy? Do you want to sacrifice Denzel's minutes? Like, I feel like you have to make some type of decision here with Chris Dunn so that, you know, he doesn't take somebody's minutes that you want to give in that second unit.
I think you kind of nail it on the head. I mean, even though I said I don't think Coby White should start right away, I still think he needs minutes to get better. He needs NBA experience. Even if he's not going to be what we saw out of like Lauri Markkanen 2 years ago, even though I think he could be if we were still on a shit team. But I truly don't think, you know, we're not at ground zero anymore. So we don't have the time and the patience to be tinkering with minutes like that. So I don't know. I hope something's done with Chris Dunn soon. Because to be honest, I want to move on past that. And like I said, I don't hate him. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he belongs in the NBA, but I just don't think we're the right situation for him to succeed and for us to succeed with him out there.
So let's move on from Dunn and the ball handlers. I want to get to the front court a little bit. So the addition of Thad Young, lots been made about the leadership, and that's a, you know, big reason to add a guy like that. I think this is a roster that needs veteran leadership, needs durability. Thad Young brings that. I call him Mr. 14-7, because if you go look at his numbers, it's like every year he's the same guy. 14 points, 7 rebounds. He's going to get you some steals, some blocks, some assists. I mean, he just can do a little bit of everything. Great fantasy basketball player, by the way. X's and O's wise, what do you think he brings to this Bulls team?
Well, like I said, I really hope for Taj Gibson, just a guy who could play 10 to 15 minutes a game and back up Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter. We got a guy, though, like you said, you know, 13, 14, and 7. I think that might dip. It might dip to 10. But he's also a dude who started 81 games the last 2 years. So on a team that was on the rise, nonetheless. So I think adding a guy like that at this point of his career, where he's played with a lot of different teams, a lot of different guys. He's even played with Zach before. He played, you know, obviously in Indiana with Victor Oladipo's kind of rise up. He played with the young guys in Minnesota. And then he played in Philadelphia kind of when they were in a goofy roulette. But, you know, regardless, I think he has a lot of NBA experience with both rebuilds, with both playoff, type teams. So I think that leadership's going to be huge. But the play is what I'm happiest about, because he's going to go in there and he can, you know, go in for 25 minutes a game, maybe even more than that, depending on what you need, and produce. So I don't think his play is going to take a major decline this year. It might over the course of his contract. It probably will. But I think the productivity and the durability that he provides to go along with that leadership is so valuable. So it's much more than I could ask for.
What do you expect? You know, a big part of Media Day was Garpax mentioning that they're expecting, you know, a bigger leap from Lauri and Zach, almost an all-star caliber type leap from them. What are you expecting from both of them this season? We'll start with Zach, and then you can talk about Lauri.
So, you know how I mentioned the casino thing earlier?
Yes.
I also put a bet down for Zach LaVine to be scoring champion.
I talked about that on one of our previous episodes. You know, Ringer article mentioned that, and I could see something like that happening.
I can see it. So it was a $5 bet, but since the odds were not in his favor whatsoever, if he gets it, I win $330 off of a $5 bet. So I'm super excited for that, because that is so low risk, high reward. And I truly do, like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Now, depending on what Lauri does, I think could kind of inhibit that. But with Zach, I'm really looking for him to build off of what he did last season. I don't expect him to be an all-star defensive player. I don't expect him to even be remotely a two-way player. But to mask that, I think he's gonna improve a little bit on defense. I don't expect much out of that. But and I also don't blow the whole defense out of proportion like everybody else thinks it's the end of the world. No, he's not a good defender, but yes, you can have him on the court. His offensive productivity Even made him, you know, a net positive player this year. If you look at that stuff, I really don't, but it's one thing I could point to get people to shut the hell up once in a while. I don't know, Zach. I definitely think he's going to take a step to stardom, whether that be just making the All-Star. But I expect over 25 points a game. Now, like I said, I don't find it out of the realm of possibility for him to just come out banging and shooting 30 points a game. I don't see that out of the realm of possibility with how efficient he is from all three levels. So I think he's a very talented scorer, and if he wanted to, he can turn that up. Now, Lauri, on the other hand, what I expect for him is so last year, just off the top of my head, I think he averaged his shooting splits were like 43%, like 36, 37% from three, and pretty close to 90% from the free throw line. Does that sound right?
It sounds about right. I'm double checking right now.
That 43%, though, is where I want him to improve. Obviously, I think he can be an over a 40% three-point shooter. I think he can do that. But where I most want him to improve this year isn't in the points. It isn't in the rebounds. It's with that overall shooting percentage. So I want him to, you know, shoot 46% from the field, or at least league average, which I think is 44, 45. So I want him to exceed league average. I know he's a shooter, but I want him to kind of make that leap. And a lot of that's going to come off feasting in the post. And I mean, clearly, I mean, I said this last year, I was super surprised at how, like, you know, like bigger he, how much bigger he got. This year it looks like he just took like the gains he made last year and just toned it up. So I think he's just going to be all around, like, just a stronger guy out there, which we need him to be. And I think that's going to help him achieve what I wanted it to do. So from Lauri, I mean, he averaged 19 points a game last year. I would love for him to, you know, eclipse 20 just as an arbitrary benchmark. I think it'd be cool. But I'm not, like I said, I'm not intrigued with him scoring a lot more, but scoring a lot more efficiently.
So two things about this. One, you didn't even need me to check anything. You pretty much nailed it across the board. 43, 36, 87% from the foul line. So pretty close to 90. So you don't need me fact checking. You know, the other thing too, you brought up with Lauri is, you know, the fact that he got bigger, and he even brought it up in his session with the media about his emphasis on getting just more physical down low, both offensively and defensively. And if he even becomes a half decent defender down low, I think that's going to take huge strides in his game.
Right. Yeah. The defender down low. Definitely. I do think for his position, he's an above average wing defender. But down low, I think he gets toasted way too much. So becoming stronger and more agile down there, I think is really going to help him, and help him also, like, gets, you know, if he's getting some more, you know, blocks, it's going to help them, you know, get into transition more, or, you know, him just being down there is going to help him with, you know, getting those rebounds that gets him into transition. So I think being, like, more efficient on both ends. I'm not looking for a numerical jump. I'm looking more from a percentage and efficiency jump from him.
All right, last question I'm going to ask you about the roster real quick. Who do you think is going to have the bigger impact this season? Wendell Carter Jr. or Otto Porter?
It's a really good question. A tough one. I think we both had them and also lacked them at different points of the season last year. But I think the person, I mean, at least at this point in his career, is Otto Porter, with what he kind of did for us in February kind of goes unseen. Zach and Lauri made a huge jump in February last year. Everything was clicking on pretty much every, you know, end of the game for both of them. But the forgotten man, I mean, not forgotten because he was a new guy, but, like, I think a lot of that was because they had a very competent, low maintenance, efficient guy playing the three. So I think that three position, a lot of times the three and the five, I always say the odd number positions, the point guard, the small forward, and the five are always like, you know, kind of those key difference makers. Whereas the two and the four, I like on my teams, I like the two and the four to be the guys. But I think there's, you know, different gears and in sparks in wires that the one, the three, and the five pull that make your best guys better. And I think Otto Porter did that the most. Now, I think Wendell Carter Jr. can kind of be like, and I might have said this on the podcast before, but I know I've said this to people, at least in direct messages and things like that, just talking Bulls, is I think Wendell Carter Jr. can be like the Otto Porter of the five. He's just that type of guy in the league. A lot of people see, you know, all-star caliber from him, but I'm not saying I don't buy it, but I just see he can be just a super efficient guy who makes everybody else better with his play on both ends of the court. Now, I think Wendell needs to improve on like rim running, wide open shots from, you know, outside of 18 feet. Those are the two areas on offense that he should work on. I think he's pretty gifted in the post, especially with his passing for his age. And I think his defense is just going to be huge for us. So I think it's a toss-up, but if I had to give it to one person, I'd probably give it to Otto.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned real quick with Wendell, and I brought it up in our last episode. We dedicated a whole episode to just talking about Wendell Carter. And one thing that, you know, I brought up was this season, given the number of scorers you have on this team, that if Wendell Carter's only averaging 10 points, but he's shooting a lot better from three because he's taking more attempts and he's hitting more of them, you know, gets closer to like high 20s, low 30s, you know, and he's hitting more of those wide open shots from the elbow. I think that you'll take, because I think there's going to be a defensive improvement. You know, he's probably the best defender as a rookie.
And I mean, that's a guy I can see kind of being like a, you know, Miles Turner type defender. I mean, he's probably my NBA player comp for him going forward. But I think he's a lot more mature than Miles Turner is. And I think Wendell Carter Jr. is from here on out captain of our team, regardless of who's the best player, who's the loudest player. I think he is the smartest. And I think he is the has the most leadership qualities to him.
For sure. And like, it's amazing that you kind of saw some of those traits last year. I mean, even as a rookie, you saw like, dude, this guy just gets it. I remember there was a couple times early in the season with Jabari Parker where Jabari was trying to get on him for defensive lapses that were, you know, Jabari's fault. And just the faces that Wendell was making, just you realize like, okay, I think this guy gets it. Like, he's a cut above the rest when it comes to that.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to be El Capitan going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a very intriguing roster. It's, I think, going to set up for a very interesting season. And I think it's probably going to be one of the more competitive seasons we've had in a while. So, real quick, before I let you go, please give the people some details where they can find Bully Pulpit Podcast and what you guys got coming up this season.
Right. So, I mean, we've kind of been on a hiatus for the last, you know, 2-3 months, just kind of since the draft stuff. But we are coming back this weekend, actually. So, we're recording on Saturday, which is the 5th. So, we'll probably post it Saturday night or Sunday. We've got a lot of new stuff coming, though. We've got, you know, I'm trying to line up better guests for this season. But I think the biggest improvement is just going to kind of be with like our sound quality and just the fact that year two, we kind of know what we're doing. So new equipment, we've got a MacBook on our hands. Ryan bought, some fancy, you know, recording stuff that has like soundboards, and you can even call in guests just on your cell phone. Real cool stuff. And then I also just made handmade from scratch, a brand new intro for our podcast. So a lot of new stuff coming your way, and we'll be back, you know, this week on iTunes, Spotify, all those ones. So
you guys are still cracking open beers during your podcasts?
I honestly, so I mean, we probably will. Don't get me wrong, but just over the last couple months, I just haven't really been drinking beer like at all. I've been only drinking whiskey.
Oh,
yeah. So, but like just doing that and changing some things in my diet, I lost like 20 pounds. So, yeah. So I don't know if there's going to be as much beer cracking, but maybe a whiskey of the week or something like that. But
I have a belt of whiskey during the show. I think it'll sound great.
Yep.
That's awesome. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to listening to you guys this season, and really appreciate you again coming on talking about Media Day. So best of luck to you this season.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.